Good morning. I'm Mark Allen with Gaper.io, and I'm here today with Pete Bursinger, the CEO of Podscribe. Good afternoon in your case, Pete. How you doing?
Good, Mark. Excited to be here, and thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us today. So to start with, can you share with us a brief background of yourself and your work experience?
Yeah, sure. So let's see. So I guess I grew up in San Francisco, went to school in the East Bay at UC Berkeley, studied computer science from there. Came out as a software engineer, began working in San Francisco for a couple of years as a software engineer, got a little, I felt like I wanted to see another place besides the Bay Area. So moved to Manhattan, where I continued as a software engineer and got myself into the ad tech world and learned all about how we're being tracked and how everything, what everything else is going on with digital advertising. And from there, actually, me and another one of my teammates, we decided to, you know, see to focus actually on the podcasting space and focus on what we could do with podcast transcriptions. Mm-hmm. He had an idea where we could analyze the transcriptions to figure out what topics were in them to then provide personalized recommendations. So say, you know, you listen to a podcast about golf. And we'd say, oh, here are 10 others that also talk about golf, actually, you know, based on the transcription. So we quit our ad tech jobs and built out a podcast player centered around providing recommendations based off of analyzing transcripts. And that worked reasonably well. I think our recommendation engine was honestly one of the better ones I've seen, but we came to realize that podcast apps are more or less commodities on, you know, some level these days, and you really need the exclusive content to differentiate yourselves or yourself, like how you see, you know, Spotify paying $100 million for Joe Rogan. So we attempted to produce a couple of our own shows. It had mixed success, and then from there we decided, you know, we're not production people, we're more of the tech people. So we then pivoted from there to figure out, you know, how else can we use transcripts to be useful for podcasters and more recently podcast advertisers. And here we are now.
Interesting. So who is your typical customer then for Podscribe? Is it the advertiser or is it the some other entity?
So both the podcaster and the advertiser. So we've got you know, several hundred podcasters now, starting, you know, from actually zero about this point last year, and they pay for to get their show transcribed. And we have a couple unique features that, because we are, I believe, the only transcription service focused specifically on podcasters, we have a couple unique features that we can provide. And for the advertisers, we have a toolkit that helps them figure out what shows they should advertise on. So for example, we'll track where brands are spending in podcasts. And then, you know, say if you're Casper Mattress, you can see where your competitors may be spending. So both podcasters and advertisers are the customers.
Interesting. And correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I know I'm a person that would agree to this, that podcasts have skyrocketed since COVID. Would you agree with that?
Yep. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think it seemed like at first there was a little bit of a dip because people weren't commuting to work and nobody, mm-hmm. you know, that was one of the big times where people would listen to them. But since then, I think people have worked them up even more into their routines, and just, yeah, I think steady growth, you know, this year and for the past decade plus.
Well, I would agree. I mean, I could tell you that before COVID, I never really had time to listen to a Joe Rogan podcast because they were about 3 hours long. Now it's like, okay, I can binge watch something or listen to Joe Rogan. And he does get some really good guests on. So I have watched some of his podcasts.
So long as you're on Spotify now.
That's true. I did it before Spotify. And wouldn't you love to have that contract with Joe Rogan? That would be a good one.
Yeah, sure would be.
But yeah, all you got to do is move to Austin and hopefully you'll run into him. So
I think he actually is actually about 20 minutes outside of Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Funny. Oh, I guess I have to. Yeah, you're saying. Yeah.
You would have to. Yeah, that's where he moved to. Yeah. So as did Elon Musk. As did my son.
Yeah, it's crazy. I just hope, you know, I just don't get there and everybody, I'm too late, you know, the last guy there. But
no, that's what they said about Silicon Valley, and it's still going. So I think you'll be okay. So when did you start PodScribe? Was it before COVID or was it after COVID?
So before COVID. So officially, the official company name is Podable. We started it, I believe, late 2016. Oh. And yep, so that's been when the actual company's been around, but with the transcription where we pivoted to the product to be actually focused on for podcasters, that we started that, we released it officially last January. So about one year ago, exactly. Wow.
Yeah. And then COVID. So, I mean, what effect did COVID have on your working arrangement? I mean, you're apparently not in Manhattan right now, so I'm assuming you've gone somewhere else. What effect did it have on your company?
Yeah. So with us, we actually, so before COVID hit, we actually did, we were up to about 10 people. We had actually an office in Manhattan. From that, before that we had a WeWork, and we had sort of considered doing the remote thing before that, but I didn't really believe in it. And then we basically kind of ran out of money with that. And we're like, no way we can afford all these people and this like very expensive place in Manhattan. So we had to downsize, get rid of that. And so before COVID, we were actually working in co-working spaces, like where you, not the full blown WeWork, but where you could actually go into a restaurant, like restaurants would rent out their space in the middle of the day. I forget the name. Kettle Space is one of them. Another one got bought by WeWork, I think, so WeWork could shut them down. But we were doing that essentially. So we would kind of go out and meet at a restaurant during the day and work there. And then after COVID, that became not really a thing. So then it was more just working from home. And then, you know, with COVID hitting, we sort of realized as well, there's not really so much of a point of us needing to be in New York. So since then we've been wherever we've really wanted to be, mostly around the US and a little bit international, but it's been working out fairly well. And we don't have any immediate plans to return to one specific city or get an office or anything like that.
So when things go what they are saying is back to normal, you foresee yourself being a 100% remote company and just everyone will work when they work?
That's the plan.
Wow. And then how much of your company is development and you know, typically it's in a tech company, it's 25% development and the rest is operations and sales, right?
That's about right. Yeah. Depending on how you count contractors, our team is about 5 to 7, so maybe an average of 6 people. And for engineers, depending on contractors, so you count them up to 3. Ballpark. Yeah.
I know your title is CEO, but are you also a developer?
Yeah, I do a fair amount of the coding. Myself as well, but trying to, you know, ease out of that just because it can be so time consuming.
Yes. Yeah. CEO definitely has different priorities, but I understand what it's like to be in a small startup. I was in a small startup once as the VP of engineering, and I was also the database administrator. So you do what you got to do, right?
Yeah. Do what you got to do. Yep.
Yep. So what do you think is the future of remote work, and what do you think can be done differently to make it more effective?
So I think COVID has obviously accelerated the path towards remote like a ton. I think a lot of companies were already sort of figuring it out, but this forced them to get their way sooner. And for a lot of these jobs, they're like, you know, we can definitely do this remote. I think not all jobs are ideal to be remote. I think there is certainly some value for, you know, being in like a city like New York to have face-to-face meetings with clients or investors, or to have, you know, some of the team, core team, be together. So I think there's definitely still value in having somewhat of an office presence, even just for energy, you know, to go in and work together. But I think for some jobs, like definitely engineering, writing, ones where you just have to put your head down and just kind of zone out all distractions and work whenever you want, you know, 3 a.m., whenever is best. I think those jobs are all very well suited for engineering. I think too, you know, a lot of other jobs like sales and whatnot are also good for remote. So, you know, I think the trend is only going to continue as companies realize we don't need to have this expensive office space. But I think in some cases still, there's still a value to it.
Yeah, no, I think actually when COVID hit, most of the people in development were like, see, I told you I could have worked from home. you know how techies are. We don't really like to drive into the office. We'd rather just get up, have a cup of coffee, and start developing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Not have anybody be pestering us with, you know, countless meetings. I remember I've always despised open offices, even though I've always worked in them. I can't stand them. I remember my first job in San Francisco, we had an open office. I felt like we were kind of engineers packed in like sardines, and I would wear earplugs. And then on top of that, I'd wear actual earmuffs just so I could like try to focus, because I didn't want to be blasting music all day. But but with your own space at home, it's a lot easier to get.
Yeah.
Yeah. The you know, your own time.
Yeah, I would probably say 50% of developers in those situations have headsets that they're listening to music when they're at work, right?
Oh, at least. Mm-hmm. I don't know how people can sit there and not have something on. And, well, and the thing is, I don't know if I'm unique, but if I'm listening to music, usually the music will take a little bit of my focus. So I feel like we'll be concentrating more, you know, 85 or 90%, not... Right. Some people, I think it may help them.
Well, no, but if you're in an office, there's noises going around. There's conversations going on around you, and it's hard to just tune them out. I think at least music, it's a consistent, you know, unless it's some song that, you know, you really like and you're going to start, you know, dancing to, which I wouldn't do, but I think it really does help a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think for, you know, the cost of interruptions is a lot higher. You know, I don't know if you've seen like the, you know, people talk about like the maker versus manager schedule. You know, if you're like a manager on calls all day, you know, jumping in to talk to somebody else isn't a big deal. But if you're, you know, in the flow developing something, it can, you know, make a big difference. And sometimes they even say, which is, I know is definitely true, like if you have like a big meeting planned in like the morning or afternoon, like sometimes it'll just soak up all your focus that it almost ruin that half day if you're trying to do programming then. So I think that's another benefit for remote work, that you have more control over when you get disturbed in your schedule.
Yeah. So do you foresee that you personally will be going back to New York, or do you think you'll pick a different city? And what about the company? Do you think you will have something in Manhattan?
For the foreseeable future, we don't plan to go back. Perhaps as we get bigger and, you know, meetings become more of a thing again, where we'd be wanting to meet with more advertisers and agencies, and there would be more of a benefit to being in New York. I think that would actually be a bigger reason for us to go back to New York, more of the sales and the partnerships than having an office there.
Yeah. And I think that's true of a lot of people. New York and San Francisco are still big hubs for, you know, biz dev, but development, I think you can do almost anywhere in the world in general.
Oh yeah. For the development,
operations.
Definitely anywhere.
Some aspects of marketing you can do anywhere in the world, right? Some marketing that has to be done on site, but a lot of marketing, the pre-marketing stuff, the setup can be done from anywhere in the world. So, well, Pete, I want to thank you for your time today. It's been really great talking to you. I wish PodScribe lots of luck. I know you're in a competitive space, but it sounds like you have a really good product that differentiates you from your competition. And I do know podcasts are growing and growing, so I think you're going to have more demand. So have a great 2021.
Thank you, Mark, for having me on. It was great speaking with you.
All right. Have a good weekend.
You as well.